All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have ripped another month off the calendar. We are now into August. Hunting season is right around the corner, and we could not be more excited. This podcast is brought to you by the boys up in Spokompton, Washington, Pacific Calls. Listen, what better way to bring in a new waterfowl season than to get a new goose or duck call? We got a promo code, BHP25, will save you 25% off of your order. Tell you what, it's one of my favorite things to do. New hunting season, you got to get a new call. They have totally redesigned the 206, made the insert a little bit longer, so it's a little bit more user-friendly, but it doesn't sacrifice anything. So you can look at that online, or I still say that the PCD is the best duck call that is on the market today. Not even close, hands down, winner, PCD. So go check them out at PacificCustomCalls.com, and you know, while you're at it, maybe get you a world-famous T-shirt. This podcast is also brought to you by Shin Gear Waders. They have taken the wader market by storm. These waders are built better to last longer. It is a tough, durable nylon material that stands up to those pesky little branches that you seem to find at 4 o'clock in the morning and puts a big asshole in your waders. So these are more durable, a lot more durable than that polyester. And it is backed by their guarantee that they will stand behind these waders for as long as you will stand in them. So if you do rip them, you do get a hole in them, something's coming apart, you send them back to the folks over at Shin Gear, they'll patch them and they'll get them right back out to you in a timely manner. The customer is their number one priority, and that's refreshing to see. Go check them out, shingear.com. If you're tired of having to buy a new pair of waders every year or two, you can get these, you can be done with it, and you can see why these are built better. We're also brought to you by Dive Bomb Industries. Jeez, they've got more products. They've got a new layout chair coming out. They've got new flag coming out. That's the one I'm looking forward to because I have had hell finding a goose flag that can stand up to 7 days of use. So, and also, Dive Bomb is coming out with a brand new pose, a new speckle belly pose, a V2 alternate pose, and it's going to kind of show that those lighter colored breast feathers, and it'll add a nice contrast and a nice pop to your decoy spread this fall. They're really a one-stop shop whenever it comes to silhouettes and floaters. Like I said, be looking out for some of the other stuff they got coming out. That's at divebombindustries.com. We're also brought to you by Boss Shot Shells. Bismuth is the way to go. It's back in style, shipped straight to your door, no middleman.
It's Dad's final resting place. We dropped Dad off with Brandon and Zach, and he's going to be loaded up in some shotgun shells, and we'll be shooting around here this next couple of years.
I don't know if I'm going to shoot mine. Well, depends on how far Ron goes.
Dad's dream was to be shot in shotgun shells, so
he's got it with the guys over at Boss Shot Shells. They've got a simple approach, make a great shotgun shell that hits hard and has a clean kill, so go check them out at BossShotShells.com. Also, we're brought to you by Dirty Duck Coffee. It's the only way that I start my morning every single morning, especially here when I'm running on little sleep at the Big Honker Lodge. We've got a new blend out, the Missouri Boat Ride. They've got a high velocity. They've got good-looking merchandise. So head over to DirtyDuckCoffee.com. Get what you're going to need for those little pick-me-ups. Be shot out of a cannon with a cup of the duck. Also, we're brought to you by Lucky Duck, best blind on the market. Now they've got a big boy dog crate for big dogs like Lou. 5-star crash test rated. They've also got fan system that you can put on this crate and keep your dog cool in the summertime. Constantly innovating over there at Lucky Duck. Like I said, they've already got the best blind that's on the market with the Lucky Duck 2x4. You can fit 4 grown men. Tops come together real nice. And spinners, can't beat them. Go check them out, LuckyDuck.com. We're also brought to you by Gun Dog Outdoors. New bumpers are out. I'm getting my dog in shape right now.
Go buy the first aid kit. Everybody needs to have a first aid kit with them. Keep one in your truck. Keep one in your blind. When you need it, you need it. The times you don't need it, that's a great day. But when you do need it, you can sure make your day a little better by having one.
If you're a hunting guide, you should carry one in your vehicle
or in your blind bag. I agree with you.
I mean, you need to carry a couple. Like you said, one in your pickup, one in your blind bag for when you're out in the spread, but you just don't know what's going to happen, and you need to be prepared for everything. This safety kit got a lot of cool features, so go check them out at Gun Dog Outdoors. And if you've got a fat dog like I got a fat dog named Lou, they got new bumpers out right now, and they're nice too. They're nice and soft. They got a nice weight to them. You can throw them a long way.
You working with Lou tonight again? Or is it just a one-night deal?
We'll see how it goes. GunDogOutdoors.com. We're also brought to you by Goose Creek Retrievers. Speaking of gun dogs, Matt Peel, he's on a circuit right now. He is just going to all the hunt tests. I think he's killing it at most of them. He's putting out a lot of great dogs right now. He's a hell of a dog trainer. If you've got any questions about your hunting dog for this coming season, if you've hit a sticking point and you need a professional, I would highly recommend you check out Matt Peel at Goose Creek Retrievers. You can check him out online. Instagram is Goose Creek Retrievers, or you can just find Matt Peel. Shoot him a message.
The man works hard and loves the animals.
He does.
And that's what you want in a dog trainer.
He is living the dream, baby, living the dream. So go check him out at Goose Creek Retrievers. We're also brought to you by the Looking Glass Duck Club podcast. Logan and Rebel, y'all put enough pressure on them. They're recording episodes. They're up on Patreon right now, so you can subscribe to their Patreon account. It's a small monthly fee, and you can get the bourbon reviews are free to everybody, but you'll be allowed access to listen to all the shenanigans going on over there at the Cheek Beater Studios. They put on a great podcast, so go check them out. LookingGlass.club.
East Texas Rebel and Fanboy Logan.
We're also brought to you by Bangtail Whiskey. They ship whiskey straight to your door. It is a beautiful whiskey that I have enjoyed all summer long. I make my whiskey sours out of it.
Did you see who Brandon Bing was with this weekend?
Who?
John Daly.
John Daly,
Daly was sitting at the bar with him, having him a Bangtail.
Was he really?
Yeah. I don't know if John had Bangtail because I don't know if he's on the bottle or not. But John looks like he's had lots of good days. So yeah. Brandon Bing is meeting some really cool people and getting to hang out with some people like that. So pretty cool.
Well, that's cool. I know you look online and Bangtail's kind of taking off everywhere. So check them out if they're at your local liquor store, Bangtail Whiskey. It's a very good whiskey, and I cannot recommend it enough. So go check them out, bangtailwhiskey.com. This podcast finally
brought to you by EyeSight Drones, which we have pipeline inspections, wind turbine inspections, well pad inspections, power line inspections, solar panel inspections. So if you have anything in the outdoor business, outdoor stuff, oil related, construction, farming, they can take care of you. They support drain tile survey, do stand counts, ranch land inspections, severe weather inspections, livestock counts, and watershed mapping. Folks, it's 2021, and drones are part of our world. EyeSight Drones can do it all. Construction, farming, ranching, oil, every industry can use it. It's so much easier and quicker, and they can get stuff done. They can do 3D modeling, volumetrics, aerial site mapping, and job site monitoring, and that's EyeSight Drones. And that's EyeSightDrones.com.
We're also brought to you, last but not least, we're brought to you by Stanfield Hunting Outfitters. If you want dates with us, you better call in a hurry, because the little bit of time that I had before we started rolling on this podcast, the phones have been ringing off the hook. So it is not going to be long, and we're going to be just about booked up. So we've got some dove dates available and a couple weekdays for goose hunting. So look us up, Stanfield Hunting Outfitters, or you can call us 940-658-3172. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this episode of the podcast, we are joined by Nathan Hawkins of Big Country Snake Removal. This guy is insane, but he's got balls of steel, and he'll crawl under houses and pick up rattlesnakes out of tight crawl spaces. So this might be my favorite podcast that we've ever done. Honestly, I was fascinated the entire time. We hope that you enjoy it. And if you got a snake problem, give this guy a call. You can find him on Facebook. He posts a lot of videos of him doing these snake extractions on his Facebook page, Big Country Snake Removal. It's fascinating stuff. We hope you enjoy this episode. Here we go. Two, one.
Boom, and welcome to the Big Honker Podcast, brought to you by Bangtail Whiskey. I am Jeff Stanfield with the world fucking famous Andy Shaver. And on the line with us today from Abilene, Texas, Big Country Snake Removal, Nathan Hawkins. Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. How are y'all?
Fine.
53,000 followers on your Facebook account.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah. You know, people are watching that wanting to see your ass get bit. You know that, right?
I was going to ask you.
I think they probably do.
Yeah.
I really do.
How is all I got to know. Like, what led to this?
It's kind of weird. I've been pretty obsessed with snakes since I was a real little kid. And it just kind of developed and built as I grew. And it's kind of become an obsession that I just can't get away from. So a few years ago, I decided to start a little business as a side project and see what could happen. And here we are.
Now, what did you do before this?
I worked for a machine shop here in Abilene.
Oh, okay.
So let's go through a deal. I got a house, and I got a rattlesnake problem underneath it, and I call you. Do you charge mm-hmm. per snake? How does that work?
No, it's pretty much by the job. We figured out, you know, at the beginning, I was trying to run through all the different scenarios and ways of doing stuff, and to me, it just didn't make sense to do it by the snake because if I have to drive, you know, 2.5 hours or something, and there's one snake, I'm not making any money at that point. So right. I kind of adjusted some things, and now we just do it kind of by the job. People will, you know, I try to get as much information as I can before going into the job, and I give them, you know, what I think it's a rough estimate of what it's going to cost, and we can work off of that.
Now, what are some of the questions that you ask these people? Like, is it, go through, like, your list of how you probe these people with questions.
When they most people will give me kind of, you know, the spiel of what's going on. You know, they've had rattlesnakes on their porch, or they saw a rattlesnake go under their house. And from there, you know, I usually ask them, you know, is there access underneath the house? You know, approximately how much room is underneath the house, different things like that. And that's usually what the deciding factor is on a lot of the stuff. Another thing is, a lot of the, like, mobile homes and things like that can have a lot of, you know, nasty insulation, all that kind of stuff underneath it. You know, we've gotten into some that are, you know, there's beehives and things like that underneath the houses. There's just a lot of different scenarios, but it's pretty straightforward. It really just boils down to how much room we have to work. Then it doesn't matter if it's one snake or 121 snakes. It doesn't matter. We don't charge by the snake. It's more by the job and how difficult they are to get out.
Could you imagine having bees and snakes
fuck
under
that.
Your house? I'd move. I'd put
it
that some
a lot more than people think.
Bees really and does. Snakes?
Oh yeah, and skunks and raccoons and cats and spiders and.
So do you remove coons also?
No, I don't mess with those.
No.
So no. Now. Can skunks and snakes, do they cohabit underneath houses, or is one feeding on the other?
No. They're together a lot. I mean, not like, you know, the rattlesnakes aren't going to cuddle with them or anything, but, right. You know, I have videos of it. If you want to look on the Facebook, we lifted up like a little box container. It had three skunks, a raccoon, a possum, and 5 rattlesnakes under it.
Oh, my goodness.
Probably a 12x6 container.
Now, what's other than snakes, obviously, what's the craziest thing that you've seen under somebody's house?
Craziest thing?
A sex toy.
Well, yeah.
You found a sex toy?
I knew that was going to be the answer.
Yeah. I really thought I found like a dead baby one time underneath there.
Goodness.
It from a long way off. You know, with our flashlights, it was on the other end, and it was a very realistic looking baby kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it kind of creeped me out because I had to go over there and obviously investigate and see what it was. But there was all sorts of bones and stuff under there. But that was pretty crazy. Kind of threw me off a little bit. There's just all sorts of stuff underneath houses that I haven't found any gold yet. I'm kind of bummed about that, but, yeah.
Have you found money?
Like dollar bills?
Nah.
Nothing like that?
No.
That's a bummer.
Nothing cool like that.
When you got 121 snakes out of a house, out of a deal, was that, was they rattlesnakes?
Yeah, it was all rattlesnakes.
What's something like that job cost to do? Because to me, it's worth $100,000 fucking dollars if it's my house.
That one actually, it was a kind of a two part trip, because we ran out of tubs, so everything that we had was completely full of rattlesnakes. I had to make a trip back to Abilene. It was up in Seymour. I had to make a trip back to Abilene to unload those and get more. That one, I think we charged them right around $1,200, something like that.
That's a damn good price.
That's a deal.
That's a steal. They got a steal of a deal on that. What do you do with 121 rattlesnakes? Can you sell them?
No, actually, I can't sell them. The way that I have my permits set up and things like that, I work with a lot of conservation and programs and stuff like that. So, I mean, I like snakes. I don't want to sell them. I don't want to kill them. So we relocate everything. It's pretty difficult finding areas that you can do that. But it's something that takes a lot of work, and you really have to win over ranchers and things like that. But most after a conversation, you can usually kind of get an idea of what they're going to do, pretty quick. And we've been very fortunate. We have a lot of places that we can actually do that. So
I'm going to tell you right now, if I saw him driving through my fucking neighborhood or one of my ranches, I'd be like, whoa, hold on. He's leaving some fucking rattlesnakes here. I want him to take them off, not bring them back.
So yeah, with the 121, I'm assuming that's the most that you've got under one place.
That was our biggest job, yeah.
Do you spread these snakes out through various ranches, or are you like, yes, you get 121 rattlesnakes, congratulations, you win the grand prize?
No, they'll all go. So that's when a lot of our research and stuff comes into play. We look at the habitat dynamics, things like that, the microhabitats. You know, how many sustainability, what's there for these snakes? And we release them into known den sites. I can tell you where there's probably 300 den sites just within an hour of Abilene.
I don't need to know.
So we'll just kind of go and look at numbers and see kind of what's there and, you know, do what we feel is going to be best for the snake to give it, you know, hopefully a better chance at survival. Not all of them make it. We do a lot better in the wintertime, relocating stuff in the wintertime than we do in the spring, summer, and fall, because the snakes, they wander a lot in those seasons. So if we can get a cold day and have a lot of rattlesnakes and we put, say, 12 of them down into a known den, those snakes are going to go down there and they're going to stay. And then when they egress in the spring, it's going to be kind of a natural transition for them.
What's the biggest snake out of them, 121? What was the biggest one you had?
Believe it or not, it wasn't that big. It's probably 4.5 foot.
What's the biggest one you've ever seen?
On a job or just in general?
Both.
On a job, I've gotten a few that were a little bit over 6 feet. Not a lot. I did find one down in South Texas. I don't know if y'all know where Guerra, Texas is. Kind of down by Laredo. I don't even really know if it's a town. It's just kind of a place. But I got one that was over 7 foot there.
God, that's a big ass snake. That's just crazy.
Oof. Now,
how many times you been bit?
Seven.
Seven God. Times? Where at? All hands?
All of them have been on the hands. Every one of them.
And how does it feel? Is it like fire?
At the beginning, no. When a snake first bites you, it's basically just like two needles sticking in you. It doesn't. I mean, it's just a thorn. It's just a small prick. It doesn't really hurt. And then what happens is, you know, your sympathetic nervous response is, you know, you go through that whole cycle, which it's a very, I don't really know the right word to put on it. It's basically what happens is you get really, really weak. Or this is what happens to me. I guess it's you know, every individual is going to be a little bit different. But with me, I'll start sweating. That's usually the first thing when the venom starts taking over. And then from there, it's like your lungs aren't working like they're like properly. So it gets really difficult to breathe. Your peripheral vision goes away. You get a horrible metallic-y kind of taste in your mouth. You'll pass out, go in and out of consciousness. Then you start throwing up, and then you'll throw up for, I mean, this, all of everything I'm telling you usually lasts, I don't know, 30 minutes, 45 minutes at most, and you're just kind of in this weird little place.
That's a lot of shit happening in 30-35 minutes.
Yeah, it's basically your body's just trying to figure out what to do at this point. So then after that, it's literally like a light switch turns off, and your body, it's like you almost get like 50% of your health back. And you don't feel great, but you can, you know, all that other stuff goes away. You can stand up, you can walk, you can do whatever. And then usually about an hour after that ish is when you really start feeling the venom, and you can feel it essentially like destroying your tissue inside. So yes, it does kind of feel like fire. It's pretty painful. And then, you know, your next week to 2 weeks are going to be pretty miserable.
Miserable, just as that tissue's rotting away, or how yeah. Miserable? How?
You just feel horrible. You feel sick. You're in excruciating pain just from all the swelling, and it's just a painful process. It really is.
It's because you got bit by a fucking rattlesnake. How many times, yeah. Now do you take the amana venom though?
So this is interesting. The very first time I was bit, I was actually 15 years old, and I got bit by a copperhead. We were doing some stupid stuff. Of course, I like snakes, and a couple guys caught one, and we were down in the park, and I may or may not have been drinking at 15 years old, but
hell yeah,
I decided,
brother,
I was going to try to grab this thing, and it didn't work out for me. So I did go to the hospital, and they gave me anti-venom, and I immediately had a reaction to it. I mean, hives, it was very difficult to breathe even on that. So they basically gave me pain medicine and told me to go home and sleep it off, basically. So I thought that was kind of weird. They did give me the anti-venom that time, but my body basically rejected it. So the next time I got bit, again, was by a copperhead, and it was kind of a similar situation, but a little bit different. And
with the drinking, you mean?
No, I actually wasn't on that one.
Okay.
I was just trying to handle it. And I got bit, went to the hospital again, and they did a little skin test on me to see if how my body would react. And immediately that area was, you know, started to get a rash. And so it was kind of the same thing. So my body rejects it. So now when the last five times I've been bit, and once by a Gila monster,
what?
I don't count that as a snake, a Gila monster.
What's that? It's a big fucking lizard.
It's the only venomous lizard in North America.
We'll circle back to that, but continue with your anti-venom.
So after that, I just never went to the hospital. It was get bit, suffer through it, and go lay in bed and take lots of Tylenol and sleep and drink a lot of water.
Jeez. So this,
the more you get bit, does it get easier and easier now?
It's actually gotten worse. I've become kind of hypersensitive to it, to a point now where it's almost like my body has developed an allergy to just snakes in general. There's sometimes, I mean, I have a big snake facility outside of Abilene where we have roughly 300 snakes from all over the world. And certain snakes, if I mess with them or, you know, am around venom, it immediately kind of makes me wheezy to where it's hard for me to breathe and it's not even in my system. So it's almost like my body has developed an allergy to it, which can be dangerous, of course, but.
Now, have you heard of anybody else going through something like that, where just being around the venom of this snake induces an allergic reaction?
Yeah.
That's common.
I wouldn't say it's common because not very many people are around the volume of snakes that we are on a daily basis. But, yeah, it does happen.
No offense, but you don't seem like the typical snake guy. You pretty smart-looking guy. You ain't got fucking... You just don't look the part. Most of the guys on TV that are snake guys, you can tell them, and you think, yeah, that's a snake guy for sure.
Snake or an
alligator guy. You seem like a really intelligent, smart guy. But then again, how the fuck do you get bit by a Gila monster?
We were actually, it had an abscess on its mouth. and so we were working to get that out of there. And they have, I mean, it's like vice grips on your finger, and they will not let go. So we actually had to pry it off. That was a different kind of bite. Like, I wasn't really concerned about that, but about 10 minutes after the bite, my lips just swole up. Like, it looked like I was fighting Mike Tyson or something. It was just, my lips were huge, but I never really felt too bad. That was really the only thing that happened as far as the venom. Of course, my finger was ripped apart, but now, the venom was completely different.
Where can you find these at?
They're native to Africa, aren't they, on islands?
Gila monsters?
Yeah.
No. I'm thinking of the pagoda dragon. That's they're Arizona, aren't they?
Arizona, Utah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where was this one that you came in contact with?
It was one from my collection.
He collects and he had, shit and he like had an that.
Abscess. Now I'm just looking online here. How big are they? They don't look to be huge.
They're not huge. I would say, 14, 16 inches total.
Oh, okay. Maybe
like an iguana.
But they're a thick bodied lizard. They're really slow. Just a real thick bodied stout.
Now, how do they inject their venom?
Through their saliva glands are on the bottom of their, it's basically saliva is what it is. Okay. It's on the bottom of their jaw. So it comes out anytime they bite anything.
And then, so what makes them venomous? Like what does it, is it just the toxins in it? Or, obviously that, but what I'm getting at is how is it different from a rattlesnake?
Is it a neurotoxin?
It's different proteins and enzymes is really all it is. Just that theirs is more of a modified saliva, which I guess all venom is to a certain degree, but that's kind of what it is.
Now, do you have any, you've got 300 snakes in your collection, you call it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any cobras or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, my God.
God almighty, hell no.
What do you do with them?
Look at
them. You don't take them out, I hope.
Oh, I bet he does.
You do?
Every week.
Yeah.
Every week.
Cobras are nasty, man. They're nasty. Huh?
Yeah, they're nasty.
Anybody that's got a snake collection is going to play with them. I'm telling you right now.
What do you mean nasty? You mean like hygienically?
Yeah. Yeah, they shit all over the place because they have a super fast metabolism. So you have to literally get them out every week to clean all that up.
How big of cobras do you have?
How many?
How big?
Geez. Oh, how big? So I have Moroccan cobras. I breed them too. So I have baby Moroccan cobras. I have zebra spitting cobras. I have, banded snouted cobras, Egyptian cobras, king cobras.
The king cobra, that's the mean one, right? King?
They're all mean. I have a king cobra. He's right at 15 feet.
Fuck that. God, how do you get out and mess with that thing?
With just a hook, you can get him out. They're actually really intelligent. I know that sounds kind of funny, but...
No, I've heard this.
They're very intelligent. So it pretty much knows, at this point in the game, it knows when I open the cage, it's either going to be food or I'm cleaning it, and that's pretty much it. So once it recognizes that I'm not opening it for food, then it kind of plays by my rules, and I can get it loaded into a big barrel and get it all cleaned out and get him out of the barrel, and he'll literally go right back into his enclosure without any issue.
So you don't have to get the old flute out and try to get him up like they do over in India or shit.
No, I couldn't play a flute.
A 15-foot, what are you feeding a 15-foot cobra?
What do I feed it?
Yeah.
So they eat a variety of things, but they're mostly snake eaters. That's where their Latin name comes from, Ophiophagus. That means snake eater in Latin. So they eat a lot of snakes. And fortunately for us, we have a lot of rattlesnakes that get hit by cars and things like that. So we collect a lot of animals off the road that, aren't destroyed, but fresh, somewhat fresh. And we freeze them to kill parasite loads and then throw them in there.
How big a snake? How many pounds? What's a 15-foot cobra weigh?
Oh, I'd guess probably, 35 pounds maybe.
Jesus Christ.
I'm just guessing, I don't know.
That's a big snake. So a snake of that size, how much do you have to feed it for it to stay healthy?
A lot. We feed it every 7 to 10 days.
Oh, really? And so what is a rattlesnake? How much does a rattlesnake eat often? How often?
It just depends on the size. So we have rattlesnakes all the way, we have pretty much everything you can, all the different species in North America. We have a lot from Mexico, and we have a lot from South America. So It just depends on each individual. Some of the rattlesnakes from Arizona, you know, if it's an adult, it might eat once a month. Some of the Gaboon vipers and things that we have, those are once a month feeders too. Their metabolism is just a lot slower.
I can't imagine having a 15-foot, 30-pound freaking cobra. Now, if that bites you, your ass is dead, right?
Not necessarily. I mean, we have anti-venom for that.
So you do have anti-venom.
It's completely different than the stuff we have for native snakes.
But do you have anti-venom for every kind of exotic snake that you have that's not from this area?
No, but I probably should.
Well, yeah, that would hindsight be 20/20 on that.
Yeah.
So, it's expensive. I've heard it is. So would you not – are you just allergic to the copperhead anti-venom, or would you be allergic potentially to the cobra venom also?
It's a possibility. The cool thing about the anti-venom that we have in North America here, you have two kinds. The FDA actually just approved of another one called Anavibe, and I'll tell you all a story about that in just a minute. But for the longest time, it's always been an anti-venom called Crofab, and that's what I'm allergic to. But the cool thing about those type of anti-venoms is they go for – it doesn't matter – what species you get bit by, other than a coral snake, it doesn't matter if you're in Florida or California or Wyoming, or it doesn't matter. They're going to use Crofab on all the native species except for the coral snake.
Why not the coral snake?
That's a neurotoxic venom. Coral snakes are related. They're an elapid snake, so they're related to cobras and mambas.
Okay, so how does the venom in a rattlesnake and a cobra differ? Like, what are they going to do to your body? So
it's hemotoxic versus neurotoxic. So your hemotoxic stuff is going to be your tissue, blood-based stuff. Your neurotoxic is going to mess with your nervous system a lot more.
So
your responses.
When somebody gets bit by a rattlesnake, what kills them? Is it the lung shutting down, or how do you end up dying from a rattlesnake bite?
Most of the time, it's anaphylactic shock is what it is. The venom very, very rarely kills anybody. If you look at the numbers, it's usually 5 to 8 people per year in the United States. That's it.
And they're probably like young kids or something like that.
Young kids or older people, you know, where their immune system has been, you know, somewhat compromised or suppressed or however you look at it. But there's not a healthy individual. People have peanut allergies, and that can cause anaphylactic shock. So it's kind of the same thing. If you have anaphylactic shock, it doesn't really matter. But going back on that, it's, you know, everybody's going to react. Their bodies are going to react a little bit different and respond a little different. It's no different than a bee sting. You know, some people, it tears them up, and other people, you know, it doesn't bother them at all. And snake venom is similar to that.
So if you get bit by a cobra, it's going to go after your central nervous system, and it's going to start shutting that down rather than getting bit in the arm or the hand by a rattlesnake and it deteriorating that tissue.
Correct.
Whew. And the mamba's the same?
Yeah, the mamba's is a neurotoxic too. And those mambas are scumbags, I'll be honest with you.
What do you mean? Explain that.
I'm not scared of any snake. You know, I feel like to do what I do, you just can't be. But the mambas are the ones that put me right on the edge with fear. Like, they're very, very fast. They're flighty. They're super unpredictable. Me and my partner at the Serpentarium, they're an elapid, so we have to, with a fast metabolism, so we have to clean them quite often. Getting those things out, if you open the enclosure and it's, you know, they're having a bad day, they literally fly out of the enclosure. This happened just last week. We're having to medicate snakes right now for parasites. It's something you do. And to do that, for the mambas, we put this, it's Panicure is what the medicine is. And we put it on a pinky mouse, let's say, and we feed it. I was up there feeding the male mamba, and as soon as I opened the cage, he came out. I have, you know, this mouse on hemostats, and he came out and was interested in the mouse, but then for whatever reason, like, he just literally came at me, mouth open, and was probably 3 inches from my face.
Oh, good.
And then he was on the floor crawling around. It took us probably 20 minutes to get him back in there, but those are the ones, they're really unpredictable, and
My question is, they're aggressive. Like everybody's listening, why the hell do you want to own one of them fuckers then?
He likes snakes, Jeff.
That would scare the piss out of me.
Well, our ultimate goal is to open this up to the public, you know, so it's basically going to be a snake zoo, and that's why we have them.
How close are you to doing that?
We're probably a year or two out, hopefully.
Now, are you wanting a certain amount of snakes? What's keeping you from doing it is what I'm asking. Are you still waiting for some snakes? Are you waiting for facility?
It's kind of a money thing. So I started this. I mean, I'm building this from the ground up. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I had to go and I bought land. I bought 40 acres for this to be on. I bought the 3,000 square foot building. I did just kind of working it and, you know, in phases as the money comes in is kind of what it really boils down to.
Right. Now, those, the Mambas, they're extremely fast too, aren't they?
Yeah.
Super fast.
I mean, they'll hunt you down. And how big is your Mamba?
I have three of them. The biggest one is probably 7.5 feet, something like that. And the smallest one's probably 5.
What, let's say I want to buy a King Cobra. What do you have to go through? What kind of paperwork and shit to buy a King Cobra do you have to go through?
It's a lot easier than you think.
that's scary.
Go down to Walmart, go to the hunting section, and say you want a controlled exotic permit. Give him $20, and he'll put it on your hunting license. And there you go.
That's it.
Where do you buy King Cobra at?
Me.
So what do you sell a Cobra? What's a Cobra cost?
It just depends. So Cobras can be kind of picky when they come out of the egg, as far as feeding. So if you have a baby King Cobra and you wanted to buy it and I did all the work to get it feeding and all that, it'll run you about $1,200
for a King Cobra.
That's scary to think of these goofy fucking neighbors that we got at times in our life that could buy a fucking Cobra.
Well, people get tigers all the time.
People do all the time.
What do they do with them? I mean, they get bit by them, and then they're going to die probably. I just saw where some guy in Austin or somewhere had one get loose in his car, and it bit and killed. They found him dead in his car.
I didn't read that. That's news to me. Like you said, most people don't take proper care of them, so they will end up dying. As a seller, what we try to do if we do sell a venomous snake to somebody, you know, we make sure they have all their permits. We make sure that they've had some sort of mentoring. They have experience with these snakes. If they can't provide that information, we won't sell them. Fortunately, there are a lot of people like me, but unfortunately, there are a few that just don't. They don't care.
Right.
So they'll sell to anybody.
How long? Say this cobra bites you, or anybody. You get this King Cobra and it bites you. How long do you have to get proper medical attention?
It just depends. Like I said, it depends on the volume. It depends on how your body responds to or reacts to the venom. So it could be anywhere from 3 minutes to never.
Right. I got anxiety watching Indiana Jones when he goes down.
You did?
Oh, my goodness. Yes. When he's down there and the King Cobras are everywhere, I couldn't watch it. Sitting there watching it with my six-year-old, I had to turn away.
I had a bull snake today at the door of my fucking office, and I wouldn't even go get out of the fucking truck. I don't like snakes at all. They're all fucking poisonous and deadly to me. And I can't imagine. A rattlesnake's bad enough. But I think if I got bit by a rattlesnake, I could make it to town and get some antivenom. If you get by a cobra, you might as well just start saying your prayers. It's over.
Oh, you have the same amount of time. There's really nothing. The only bad thing about... So, like, if you got bit, you would have to get the anti-venom from, like, the Abilene Zoo. They have plenty of it, so they would get you the anti-venom.
And it's expensive. What is it, like, $3,000 a
shot?
Who cares?
You're going to die. You think at Knox City Hospital, they're like, we got to give you some King Cobra venom. You're fucked.
Not necessarily. You might not die from a rattlesnake bite.
No, Cobra. If I got a King Cobra at the lodge, I'm going to die before they get me to Abilene to get some help. First of all, I'm going to have a heart attack or I'm going to shit my pants anyway, so it don't matter. I'm going to die. I get scared of people that go to fucking Australia. I do not want to go to Australia at all just because everything over there that bites you is going to kill you. You know? So
I want to go there bad.
Of course you would. I could understand that. That's would probably be that in the Saharan Desert or somewhere.
Where is the most venomous, deadliest snake at?
Australia.
Yeah. Australia. What is it? What's the snake?
The inland taipan.
You don't have any of those, do you?
Not yet. Working on it.
Working on it? The inland taipan? I don't know that I've ever seen one of these.
Hope you don't.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to look it up on Google, Jeff.
I don't even like going through the snake enclosure at the Fort Worth Zoo. I get scared. Snakes, they bother me. You respect them, but you've been bit 7 freaking times.
Yeah, but I feel like it's all, every one of those, it was due to, well, 6 of them. We all know that what happened on the first one, but the other one is just me being complacent and not doing things the right way.
But you've been bit by the right snake because you got something for those. Those cobra ones, even though you got to innovate them, that's got to scare the hell out of you. Are you a married man?
Engaged.
That broad net, but that lady better get some fucking life insurance, a bunch of it on your ass.
Does she worry about you?
I got a little bit of it.
She needs to get more.
But she's been dealing with me and all of this for 10 years now. So
does she
actually goes with me to Arizona and doesn't hunt snakes with me. She kind of just hikes around the mountains. But that's actually where I proposed to her was in Arizona after she found one of the coolest speckled rattlesnakes I've ever seen in my life. I figured, hey, she found one of these that'll work.
Now, is this a rare snake or was this particular one just cool looking?
So the speckled rattlesnakes are my favorite snakes on the planet. They're really variable depending on where you find them. They're not rare. They're just not commonly seen. They live up in, you know, these desert mountains. It's very harsh in some of these places, and it's hard to hike some of these places. So they're just not commonly seen. If you can Google like white speckled rattlesnake, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
White speckled. Hold on, I want to go back to this inland taipan. The inland taipan, also commonly known as the western taipan, small scaled snake, extremely fierce and extremely venomous. But it doesn't. Oh. I'd drop dead. Now, what happens with this? Same type deal? You get bit, just say your prayers because you're going away?
Probably with that one, yeah.
Really?
I would say that one's probably, and I don't quote me on this, but I would say that's probably a more of a 50-50 type deal on something like that.
And how hard is it to track one of these down for your snake place that you're trying to open?
It's pretty hard. Australia has very, very strict exporting and importing laws, so it's a little bit more difficult to get that kind of stuff.
I'm trying to look here. The most toxic of any snake, the inland taipan, says much more than even a sea snake. So have you been bit when you were doing one of these extraction jobs?
Never.
Never?
Never.
Wow.
I did have my partner at the Serpentarium, actually, he did get bit on a job outside of Hamlin, and that was a really, really bad deal. He was helping me out that day, and it was one of those deals where I should have listened to my gut a little bit more. It was really hot outside, and they were doing remodeling on this house, so they closed these rattlesnakes in there, and there was only 5 of them underneath there. But when I got there, I crawled underneath. It was really, really difficult for me to even get underneath this house. There was just no room. And Tony was on the outside. And normally in a situation like that, I will grab a snake and hand it to him, and he will grab it and pull it out of the hole and put it, you know, in an enclosure. But these snakes, as soon as I got under there, they were pissed off. They were rattling. I grabbed one snake, got it out, and then there was a big snake right in front of me. Was the biggest one under there, and it wasn't a huge snake, probably 4.5 foot.
How far away from you for people that are trying to get a visual?
Oh, probably
this?
4 feet.
Oh,
like that. 4 to 5 foot.
Okay.
And so I'm on my belly, and this guy he's fired up, ready to go, and I grab him and I hand him over to Tony. The problem that we ran into is the way that the beams underneath the house ran, Tony was having to, when I handed him the snake and he grabbed it, he was having to move the snake around and then come up out of a hole like that, because it was just a small hole inside of a closet, basically, is how you got underneath the house. And when he did that, I told him, I handed him the snake, and it looked like it was a little bit far down. And I said, "Are you sure you got it?" And he said, "Yeah." And so once he said, "Yeah," my attention was focused back on the other three snakes that were in front of me. And
how far are they away?
4 or 5 foot.
So they're all generally in the same, all the snakes were in the same general area. Okay.
This, in this case, yeah. And generally they are. Mm-hmm. And when I focused back on those other three snakes, I could hear him trying to get this snake out. Like I said, it was weird for him, a weird way for him to maneuver to get it out. Mm-hmm. And then I just heard him yell "shit" really loud. And I heard him yell "shit," and then I heard him like step back, and I knew immediately what had happened.
Yeah.
And he said something like, "Dude, I just got bit." And the problem now was I had another snake in my tongs, and the snake that he had, he never pulled it out. It bit him. Basically, he grabbed it too far back. And when he was maneuvering, he moved his hand like this to get leverage and turn it, and it got him on the wrist.
Uh-oh.
So now I have, and the way that he had it, this snake is hung up in his tongs and closed and pinched, and there's no way for me to get out of the house now. The snake is stuck right there, and I had one in my tongs, one stuck in his tongs, and I have no idea what's going on above me. I can just hear kind of chaos. Mm-hmm. And so what I decided to do with the one that I had, I kind of turned and I just flung it, you know, as far as I could kind of away. And then the others in front of me, I just kind of tapped them and made them move down the wall. And now it was me trying to figure out how to get this one that was hung up in his tongs. So I eventually, you know, grabbed it with mine and figured out a way to get this snake out. And I did the same thing, flung it. And then by the time all of that happened, when I got out of that hole, he was already passed out 100%.
Oh, so, wow.
Literally maybe 2 to 3 minutes tops, and he was already passed out. And he's not a small person either. He's a big, stout guy, and he was just completely lights out. And the ranch foreman out there was just flipping out. He had no idea what was going on. He thought he was dead. And I was like, "No, he's not." And I was yelling from underneath the house, dial 911, just because I didn't know how long I was going to be under the house with all everything that was going on. But I got out. He was passed out. I got him some water, and one of the guys had a bandana, and I got some cold water on it, loaded him up, and we actually met the ambulance from Hamlin, and they hauled him back to Abilene. And he was fine after that.
Was that his first snake bite?
No, that was his fourth.
He had been bitten before?
The veterans.
Yeah. Wow.
The under the house deal, that'd be another thing that would bother me, is the claustrophobia.
Yeah. Yeah.
It can be bad at times, but for the most part, I think I'm pretty comfortable in most of these situations. The worst I've ever felt was actually in Maljamar, New Mexico. I think we got 35, 36 snakes out from under there, but it was the way that, I don't know if it's just that they build houses different over there. I'm not really sure, but every 10 by 10 feet has like a concrete chamber that goes. So all these chambers are really, really small. And we were under there, and there was probably 20 snakes in this one chamber, and some really big snakes that were really, really pissed off. And I had nowhere to move. There was at one point, I had two snakes crawl over my legs. I had one crawl over my arm while I had another one in.
Oh, fuck that.
It's those are awkward.
Yeah, I'd say that.
Moments.
Now, so when they crawl over you, they're not looking to attack you per se. Mm-hmm. They're just trying to go from point A to point B, right?
Right. Now, and I'm just in the way.
Good luck telling yourself that, but when you're under a house with them.
The first time it happened, I did kind of I kind of flipped out a little bit just because it had never happened before, but it's happened probably, I don't know, a dozen times since then. And it's all worked out in my favor.
Now,
do you, I got a question real quick.
Go ahead.
Do you like pythons and stuff like that also, or just venomous snakes?
Mostly venomous. I do have some other snuff. I do have a 16-foot reticulated python. I have an anaconda. I have indigo snakes, milk snakes, king snakes, things like that.
Now, the indigo snake will kill a rattlesnake, won't it?
Yes, sir.
Will a bull snake, or is that all horseshit?
That's all horseshit.
It's not true.
But the indigo will, though, right?
Yes. Yes. The indigo is the most opportunistic snake we have in North America. It'll literally eat anything.
The indigo. And it's not poisonous?
Not at all. Being that it's a non-venomous snake, they're actually not constrictors like a bull snake, a rat snake. Most of the snakes that you think of like that are actually constrictors, and an indigo is not a constrictor. It's basically a bulldog. It just overpowers these other animals is what it does.
I've never seen one of these, I don't think.
They're in South Texas.
Oh, they're not up here?
No.
Oh, okay. That's probably why I've never seen one.
I've seen videos of them before. A guy had a rattlesnake by a deal and had a blue indigo. That sucker come right up, went around behind it and grabbed that rattlesnake and choked that fucker out, and it was done.
Yep.
Was that
incredible.
There was a video that I saw. Maybe that's what it was. It was an indigo snake.
Yeah, the Mexican guy's by the fence post.
The Mexican guy has the fence post, and like this indigo snake, it hears the rattlesnake rattling, and it comes out of the woodworks.
Yeah.
And just goes to town on this thing. That was a big snake, too.
Yeah. How big did the indigos get? 6 foot?
About 8 feet, I think.
Wow. Yeah,
this snake, it looked big. I remember thinking.
So do you have snakes in your house, like these pythons and stuff? Do you just let them loose in your house?
No, hell no. Good. Everything's at the snake facility. And then Tony, anytime we get a new snake in, it goes through a 90-day quarantine period where we send stool samples off to make sure it doesn't have any diseases or anything like that. We make sure it's feeding well, doing everything. He does that at his house, and then he brings, after the 90-day period, if everything checks out, we bring them into the facility.
Now, what kind of diseases can snakes have? Is it just diseases that would kill other snakes?
Yeah. So the worst one is called Cryptosporidium. That one is a horrible, horrible thing for a snake. Basically, what that does is it's a parasite, and it gets inside of you and grows exponentially. It basically surrounds your stomach casing, so these animals cannot digest food. So they can eat everything, but they can't process it, so they end up having to regurgitate everything. So they starve to death. And the bad thing about that is there's absolutely no cure for it. It's very, very hard to kill, even if it's horrible, horrible.
How do they get it? Just from other snakes out in the wild, or is this like a captivity type thing that they get?
It's both. Most of the cases do come from captivity, but there has to be, you know, crypto. Sure. I mean, it's. I think any animal can get, or I think we can even get it, but it's not, it's very species dependent. So if I got snake crypto, it wouldn't do anything at all to me.
Right. Now,
but if I got,
you look like a big
human
guy.
It would be different.
I mean, you look like a bigger guy. Like, how tall are you?
6'1".
6'1"? I mean, crawling under these houses is probably not the easiest thing to do. I'm 5'10", 170 pounds, and we had a remodeling company for a long time, so I've crawled under houses quite a bit, and it's not easy to do. I can't imagine having a rattlesnake on a floor joist above me or 3 feet in front of me and having to, number one, catch it, and, oh, shit, if I miss, having to retreat or something like that.
Yeah, we try to – the way that we do it, it's pretty – the formula is pretty simple. We go under the houses and locate where the snakes are, and then we come out and we figure out what's the best way to get these out safely. We always try to figure out, you know, what our exit is, our escape is, and it works about 90% of the time.
Let me ask you, from a business standpoint, how many people have stiffed you after you got the freaking snakes out of them?
Better say Man, zero.
Three.
I'd take my fucking snakes I caught somewhere else over to them.
I'd put them back in there.
I've thought about that. I really have. But
What did they What did they say? How the hell can you get out of paying?
It's a business. They just, people get burned all the time.
Yes, yeah, it's just that, you know, the crap where they say, okay, send me an invoice, you know, that kind of deal. Right. And then they block all contact from me. So I can't call them. I can't do anything. I still know where they live, though.
Yeah, I would.
I drop off them 121 rattlesnakes. I go back to him and say, hey, bub, look here in this truck. There's 121 rattlesnakes. They're going in your yard, or you can write me a check real fast. No, I want cash.
I really have thought about it. I really have.
I'm an asshole. I would do that. Where do you
You're the last guy I would want to piss off. Like, you've got cobras and everything else.
Oh, shit.
Like, I'll put more than just a rattlesnake underneath your house.
Guy comes home, finds a cobra in the living room. He's like, I better pay that fucker. Or,
call you again.
How many days a week do y'all work on average? Because do y'all have a busy season? Is the spring and the winter your busy times, or is it summertime?
Summertime is actually our slowest time of the year. We're super busy in the fall. And that has a lot to do with it's just the way the cycles work. Snakes become a lot more active once the temperatures are more favorable. And then also you have the babies that are on the ground at that time. Winter's really, really busy. Because that's when we go underneath houses and remove all these dens. And the spring is very busy, too, because that's when people start seeing them.
Now, in the wintertime, when you're getting out of dens, a lot of them are lethargic. They don't move much, right?
For the most part, yeah. But a lot of people, there's a reason that's a den. Rattlesnake dens are almost always going to be in areas where the air is very stagnant. It maintains more of a consistent temperature under there. So even in the wintertime, yes, they are, you know, in a metabolic depression, and they are slower, more lethargic, but it's still 55, 60 degrees under there most of the time, if not warmer.
Does it stink under these houses with all these rattlesnakes? Is there an odor?
Rattlesnakes, not really, but a lot of people, man, cat shit. That's the bad.
Cat shit.
Houses that have a bunch of cats, there's cat shit everywhere. Yeah. That's awful.
I figured cats would kill rattlesnakes.
They do, but I think it's once a rattlesnake gets to a certain size, the cat ain't gonna mess with it.
Right. Now, how long does it take for rattlesnakes to establish a den?
It can happen really, really fast, within a couple of years.
Really?
Yeah.
So these places that you're going to, if a den's established, it's been that way for a while.
Probably, yeah. We did a really interesting job between Baird and Albany, and this guy had just moved this mobile home in there for his workers, and it had been there maybe a year. I think he said 9 months or something like that. And we went under there and we removed almost 50 rattlesnakes within a year. Mm-hmm. And he told me that they just moved it in. You could still see like footprints under there from where these workers were doing things, and which was crazy. We figured it out later. Basically what he did, he had a bunch of guys come out and basically gas an entire hillside right behind that. So they pushed all these snakes out, and so the snakes were displaced, and they had to find a new home, and that's where it ended up being. So it can happen, and you know, there's a lot of variables that play into that, but for the most part, you know, if most of the dens are old dens and they've been there for a long, long time, but it can happen really quick if they have to use it. It can happen fast.
We've got two old.
You turned your microphone off. Yeah, I don't know how.
Yeah, there you go. We've got two cellars close to us that are dens, and there's a lot of snakes in them.
Where?
I don't want to say it on the air, but yeah, and there's two places.
Not right out here?
No, not at the lodge, but right by our house in Knox City. There's two different cellars I know of that are dens.
You're full of shit.
I can tell you afterwards. I can take you right to them.
In town?
Outside of town. One's north of Knox City and one's west of Knox City.
But I thought you were meaning close to your house.
No. But I know two places that have them that are dens, and both places, one place someone has moved a house in by, and I'm going to bet they've dealt with snakes a lot. And the other one, they haven't, but eventually it will be. But you've got a 6.5-foot rattlesnake you've caught. What's a rattlesnake's a heavy snake, too, aren't they?
Yeah.
What's a 6.5-foot rattle? What's a 6-foot rattlesnake weigh, 40 pounds?
No, nothing like that. Less than 15.
Oh, okay. They're not as heavy as I thought. I saw a video of one that was caught on the King Ranch down by South Padre Island, and that some bitch's head looked like the size of a softball.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got to be careful with those pictures, though. It's, you know, it's kind of one of those deals. If somebody shows you a picture of a 3-pound bass, they're going to tell you it's 6 pounds.
Yeah, they right. hold
that's
it closer.
What these people do with snakes, too.
Yeah.
Now, did you go, were you raised in like one of these snake churches type deals where no. anything like that? Nothing.
No. Like I said, I don't know. They've just always fascinated me. I remember, you know, a little kid, I couldn't have even been 5 years old, 4 or 5. And I would go and I would always look for horned lizards and snakes, even at a young age like that. And it was one of those things that I was fascinated by them. And then later on in life, you know, in my early teens and things, I guess, you know, around that time, 10, 9, 10, 11, 12, I don't know. I would go and spend every summer at my grandmother's, and there was just copperheads everywhere out there. So going and seeing them, and, you know, even at, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old, I was catching them and putting them in a bucket, and I would go down there and just sit and watch them, and I'd keep them in there for a couple of days and try to feed them, you know, crickets and, you know, ridiculous things, and then I would release them, and I was 10 years old, so... And then when I got a little older, I started really getting into the rattlesnakes and learning a lot about them and dedicating a lot of my time out searching for them from, you know, anywhere from Florida to California and all across the Southwest. And just learning as much as I can about them, and I'm still obsessed to this day.
The rattles on a rattlesnake, is that an accurate way to age them, or is that all horseshit also? You've always heard like one button's a year, like rings on a tree.
That's horseshit. So the rattles are made up of keratin, which is the same thing as your fingernails are made up of. And they grow a new segment every time they shed. So, you know, a snake can shed 5, 6, 7 times in a year.
Oh, wow.
So it just depends. On a good year, they can shed that much. On a bad year, it may be 3 or 4. It just depends.
Now that shedding, that's all like diet based, right? Like that just means they're eating enough to where they're outgrowing their skin. Is that what that is, or what makes
for the most part? It's no different than, you know, a spider molting or anything like that. It's just kind of part of their process. It has a lot to do with growing. It can also happen when they start losing a lot of weight in a hard year. You know, they can lose their skin that way too. But most of our snakes, depending on what species are, I mean, it's going to be 4 to 5, 6 times a year.
That's called the ectoskeleton. Is that right? What they lose when they shed it? Or am I off on this?
I think you're off.
I've never heard that.
Okay. An ectoskeleton is...
I have no idea.
Like a crab.
Okay.
Yeah.
With a snake, I've been told this too. If you run over a rattlesnake... And you tear its skin like that, can it shed, or will it die from that?
I guess it just depends on what happened internally, really. We've rehabilitated injured snakes. Sometimes, you know, a homeowner will shoot one and it doesn't die. So we have to go underneath the house, and now we're pulling out a pissed off snake that now has a bullet hole in it. Not too long ago, a lady called us about a bull snake eating her chicken eggs and peacock eggs. And when we got there, it actually was eating one of the peacock eggs, but it was, I guess the egg was too big. So it actually ripped its skin right behind its head on its throat right there. So it was kind of a weird deal, but that snake sheds. And, you know, the ones that we've rehabilitated, you know, and we keep them there until we feel like they can be released again. And some of those have shed without issue.
Because I've heard because they're a cold-blooded animal, they can't send the proteins to heal themselves is what I've heard. And it, like I said, it might be horse shit, but it's just...
I don't think so. I think they're pretty durable. I think they can get through a lot of that stuff. They're
right.
Okay.
Alligator's cold-blooded, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's got one of the... They're trying to figure out how to pull proteins out of it to wounds and stuff, because right. they can heal themselves in that nasty, shitty water.
Yeah.
Do you mess with alligators or anything like that, or strictly snakes?
Yeah, I have some.
They don't scare you?
No.
No.
Alligators? No. There's nothing to be scared of.
Fuck all they do is bite you.
Why do you say that? Just because they're more predictable?
They're very predictable. As far as the way they lunge, and you can read them a lot better than you can a snake do. Those are cake to work with.
How so? You say you can read them better, just their temperament or what their next move
their demeanor,
is gonna be?
Everything. You can tell, and that's the thing is like, well, you can figure it out. It's something that can be taught, and it's not hard. You can get out of the way of their strikes, really, really easy. Usually by taking one big step away, you're out of it. Same thing with the rattlesnake. If one big step away is usually more than enough to put you in a safe zone.
You think about it with alligators. There's a guy making $10 an hour at some alligator farm in Alabama or Mississippi that they're paying, and he's rolling around on top of them, holding their mouths shut and shit. You don't see somebody doing that with snakes.
Now, what is it with alligators? You can hold their mouth shut very easily, but you can't open it? Is that what it is?
So the way that their muscles are designed, it's basically for crushing, chomping, and holding on tight. You can hold them closed very, very easily. Very, very easy.
But prying it open. Prying it open. But I don't think prying it open is such a cakewalk.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to do that. I don't think you are at all.
You're one of the most interesting guys we've had on here. I'm telling you, you don't fit the bill as a snake catcher.
Well, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Most of them guys
I guess
are.
That's a compliment.
Yeah, it is a compliment. He's a regular kind of guy. He's very intelligent. I mean,
how long? I mean, because you know so much about snakes. Did you go to any sort of schooling to know? I mean, because you know about the proteins in them and, you know, all the different diseases that they carry, or is this just stuff that you've kind of picked up throughout your time with snakes?
It's just something I've picked up. I mean, it has a lot to do with, I mean, there's a lot of really, really good literature out there that's readily available. And it's just stuff that if I dive into it, I'm going to stay there until I learn it. And I do that a lot. There's a lot of reading that I do. And then there's a lot of, you know, stuff out in the field too. I spend a ton of time out in the field looking for these. You know, I go to Arizona 4 to 5 times every year for 8 to 10 days. So I spend 40 to 50 days in the Southwest looking for snakes. It's an obsession.
So this is truly like your hobby that you have turned into your job.
Absolutely.
And you're obsessed with it. That's fascinating. Can you tell when you get under a house how the day's going to go? You can just right away?
Yeah, right away.
You know, like these are going to be assholes to deal with, or this is going to be a cakewalk.
Yep.
And they're all pretty much on the same page temperamentally?
No, I mean, they're really no different than humans or dogs or cattle or whatever. They're all going to behave a little bit different. There's, you know, some individuals are going to be a little more cranky. Some I can grab and drag around 30 yards and take it out, and it won't ever rattle or strike or do anything. They're just everyone's a little bit different.
Right. So
it mostly has to do with the difficulty of getting them out. That's kind of how I base the day.
Oh. So you're not really talking about the rattlesnakes. You're talking about what you've got to work with down there.
Yeah. The rattlesnakes, I mean, it doesn't bother me if they're angry or not. They still have to come out one way or another, so.
Now,
I bet he's underbid. I bet you've had some jobs you've underbid really bad.
Yeah, probably so.
Probably in the beginning.
The main, I try to help people out too in some situations. So if somebody doesn't have a lot of money, or, you know, is going through a hard time or whatever it may be, you know, I'll definitely help them out. And that's gotten me in a little bit of trouble a few times.
It usually happens that way.
Yeah.
Now, you don't gas or anything. Like, when you go under there, like, you're getting the snake at what he is, right? Or do you pump a little bit of gas? No?
Zero gas. I won't use it.
Just because you respect the snake too much, or why, or is it illegal?
Well, I don't think it's a real... I could be wrong. I don't think it's a good idea to spray gasoline underneath a house. Because, I mean, if it blows up, I'm kind of in deep shit.
Well, that's true, too.
But no, it has a lot to do with the snakes. And the thing about it is gas underneath the house is not really going to do you a whole lot of good anyway. Those snakes can likely find a spot underneath that house where the fumes aren't even getting to them. So, and gas kind of, those fumes dissipate somewhat quickly. So you'd have to use a lot of it, and a lot of it just doesn't seem like a real good idea.
Well, and it's probably not good for you to be working in an environment where gas fumes are, where that's what you've got to breathe all day long.
Yeah. That would be bad.
So,
I'd rather smell gas than cat shit, though.
He's got a real problem with cat shit.
Those cats just beat the hell out of you. Mm-hmm. Do you worry, like, when you're crawling, like, one being on a floor joist that you didn't see and, like, maybe putting your head by this damn thing?
I mean, it's happened, but that's kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier, that the way we go under there, and that's why we approach it that way, is we spend a lot of time under there before we even touch a snake. We want to figure out where everyone is. And unfortunately, there's a lot of times, you know, there's areas you can't see.
Yeah.
I crawled under a house not too long ago, and it was kind of a weird situation. Normally what I do is I get my phone and reverse it when I'm going under a house and stick it up and make sure there's not a snake above my head.
Yeah.
And I didn't see anything on the camera, but there was still one up there. So I crawled right underneath it, and it started sounding off when I was about halfway underneath it. Obviously I called back out. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it can happen.
Do you would you ever, like, send, like, a car down there or, like, a camera on it to do this scouting trip, or do you feel like you need to go down there to do it?
So we've actually thought about that a few times, and I actually had a guy outside of Abilene that thought he just had it all figured out, and he was going to get, like, this, he was going to make me this little army tank thing with all these cameras on it, and he had this computer monitor ready to go, everything, and he was like, come out here, let's test it out, let's see how it does. The idea is phenomenal. We tested it underneath his house, and it got stuck underneath a floor joist and is still there.
Well, it's a good idea at least.
Yeah.
Is there a time of year where snakes are more aggressive?
I don't think snakes are ever aggressive, to be honest with you. I think it's the, you know, like people say all the time that snakes chase you.
You're right.
Well, I remove over 1,000 rattlesnakes from underneath people's houses every winter, and I see another 1,000 more out in the wild, if not more, and I've never been chased by any snake whatsoever. So I don't think it's aggression. I think it's more of a defensive. It's defensive, not aggressive. If snakes were aggressive and mean, I would have been bit a hell of a lot more than 7 times.
Right. So is there a time where they're more defensive then and kind of on guard, easier to piss off?
When it's hot.
When it's hot?
When it's hot and they feel vulnerable, then yeah, they're going to be nasty.
Really? You know, I've obviously not had the snake encounters that you have, but, you know, out turkey hunting or anything like that, you run across the occasional rattlesnake. For the most part, I mean, you back up away from them and they do their best to kind of leave you alone.
Oh, yeah.
And try to go the opposite way. So.
Yeah, that's.
Have you noticed that snakes are not rattling as much as they used to? Because you hear that a lot also.
Yeah, I hear that more than I care to admit. But it's, you know, they say that because of the wild hogs. So mm-hmm. if you go back and you look at what that is, and this is just my opinion on it, that's adaptation, or some call it evolution, mm-hmm. however you want to look at it. But the thing is hog, both of those things take a long time to establish.
Right.
Evolution, thousands and thousands and thousands of years, adaptations, you know, several hundred probably, to that degree. And another thing is when I go to Arizona and things like that, there's not feral pigs over there in these deserts. The snakes still don't rattle. And I don't think it's one of those things like, you know, when a mother gives birth to, you know, 12 baby diamondbacks, she's not saying, all right, guys, don't rattle because there's wild hogs out here. You know, it just doesn't work like that, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. And like I said, it's camouflage is their number one defense. So why are they going to rattle? If they feel like they're concealed, protected, they're not going to sing off on you.
Right. So why did they evolve to have rattles on their butt? Because, I mean, it's kind of a giveaway for a predator if they rattle. Do you have any theories on why?
They don't really have a whole lot of predators. They don't. And that rattle is just a warning system. Just like, you know, a posematic coloration, things like that. I go back to that because why is a coral snake that bright and vibrant? Because that tells a predator, you don't want to do that. I'm bad news. So it's kind of the same thing. I feel like, you know, the rattle's there just to warn a predator off more than it is to make it susceptible.
Right. So what's the other snake that looks like the coral snake that you're not supposed to mess with or that's harmless?
Milk snake.
The milk snake. And then, so what's that? Red touches black and then red touches yellow and all that good shit?
Yeah, that's kind of how that works. But there's aberrancies in a lot of coral snake patterns. And I would say it's pretty true for the United States. But once you get down into Mexico, South America, the coral snakes down there, that won't work at all.
Shit. Well, I'll just stay away from all of them. So we're in August. We're going to be in August now. So you're not probably not going under a whole lot of houses yet, but once September, October rolls around, you'll start doing more and more extractions.
Yeah, I mean, we're doing some now because some of the females are starting to drop their babies. And so some people are seeing snakes. And also around Abilene, there's so much, you know, new development that was once a native land. So mm-hmm. once all that's disrupted, snakes are calling, trying to figure out life again. And so we get calls daily to go get snakes. It's just nothing under a house.
Right.
Not many under a house right now.
So how do they establish like a den? Because that's a bunch of snakes. Are they all of the same family or do they run across each other in the wild and like, hey, party at Jim Bob's house? Is there any theory on how dens get established?
Well, a lot of the snakes are, I guess, for lack of a better word, incest. There is line breeding with a lot of these populations. The reason that they're underneath houses or whatever is simply because that's the best place for them to survive a winter. That's where there's going to be the most consistent temperatures. That's why they're there. It's the best place. You do have other animals. Most of the time it's going to be males that establish the den. And usually for every 12 snakes, there's going to be one really dominant male. And that just kind of grows in exponentially. But you do have other males that come from other dens that have been pushed out by other dominant males. And they, you know, they'll hang out in other dens and they kind of get thrown around for a few years until they can become, you know, decent sized and actually fight in combat with the other male snakes for breeding.
How do they fight? Do they fight to the death or is it just a dominance type deal?
It's kind of like two bucks fighting. It's kind of the same thing. It's they come up and they wrap up and whichever one's stronger kind of slams it or pins it a little bit. And then once that's established, the weaker of the two will crawl off.
So he'll just have to go
tail
away.
And go.
He'll just have to go away.
Yep.
I could go so many different directions. You truly are. I don't know how you walk around with balls like you got. I mean, it's got to be difficult. You got to have a special pair of pants or something.
On our podcast, we deal with a lot of people that do really different things for a living, and I found out most every one of them has a passion for what they do.
Yep.
And you are another one. You found a way to make a living doing something you like to do. So God bless you, and God bless capitalism, because you've done it. If people want to get a hold of you and they got a snake problem, how do they get a hold of you?
You can get on Big Country Snake Removal on Facebook. And we also have a web page. It's actually in the process of being launched, or you can call me either one.
How far will you go? Do you try to stay right around the Big Country or where will you go to?
Well, that was the initial plan 5 years ago, was just to kind of work around here, but it's developed so much now that we work all over the state. We go into New Mexico a lot. We go into Oklahoma. and do some work. We've been once to Louisiana. Most of the stuff is in Texas or New Mexico, but we've gone down to Corpus a few times. We've gone to El Paso. I'm going up to Amarillo next week, just kind of all over.
If you got the money, he's got the time.
That's right.
If you get around Knox City ever doing it again, let us know. I'd like to come out and watch you do it.
Not me.
Yeah, I'm actually there. I'd say I'm there once a month, I would say.
Well, next time you're there, let me know. I'd sure like to come see you do it. Okay. I don't want to crawl into the fucking house. I'd like to stay outside and watch him do it. I ain't going
then you're not going to see much because he's under the house, Jeff.
Well, I ain't going down in the house. Well, anyways, Nathan, we appreciate you being on here, man. You're an interesting guy. We wish you the best of luck. And let me, like I said, let me know next time you're out this way.
All right, appreciate it.
Hey, you have a good day, sir.
See you, bud. Bye.
That's an interesting guy. Again, someone found a way to make a living out of something they love to do.
That's exactly right.
Can you imagine having a 15-foot king cobra?
No.
As a pet?
No.
That's crazy.
I can't imagine any of that, Jeff.
No, I can't either. I'm scared to death of snakes. I'm not going to lie right now.
I've got the heebie-jeebies. Like, I've been having to look under my chair this entire time.
If my grandkids were in danger of a snake, I'd save them. If it was you or your mom, y'all would probably be out for yourself.
I
hate snakes that much. I'm scared to death of them. I'm not going to lie. If a snake jumped in the boat, my ass is swimming.
I've often thought about that when I take Reese out turkey hunting. What am I going to do?
Are you going to leave him?
Trip his little ass.
Yeah, you're on your own, son.
All right, our cameras are shutting off.
All right. Thank y'all. God bless y'all. Have a great week.
Check out all of our wonderful sponsors. Check out Lucky Duck, Looking Glass Duck Club, Gun Dog Outdoors, Goose Creek Retrievers, Bangtail Whiskey, Eyesight Drone Service, Stanfield Hunting Outfitters, Dirty Duck Coffee, Boss Shot Shells, Dive Bomb Industries, Pacific Calls, and Shin Gear Waiters.